You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 13 for Monday, March 7th, 2022. JJ Sefton here with CBD and Misanthropic Humanitarian. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Start your engines.
Good vroom, afternoon. Vroom. How are you?
I'm vroom vrooming.
Vroom.
Yes.
How do you do, guys?
Well, the world seems to be a little bit closer to some sort of insanity. Nuclear war, anybody? Certainly, this was not how, I don't think anybody could have even imagined this. We're now in day 12, the 12th day of what was supposed to be maybe 12 hours to 24, 36 hours of a cakewalk for Vladimir Putin into the Ukraine, where he decided instead of just the Donbass or the whatever the Sudetenland is of Russian-speaking citizens in the Ukraine, he was going to go for the whole enchilada or pozanki or whatever they call it over there. And right from the get-go, he didn't count on two things, the resistance of the Ukrainian people and military, and the incredible ineptitude of seemingly of the Russian generalship. I mean, this thing has turned into a fiasco for him, and he's being backed into a corner. Meanwhile, on this side of the equation, yes, we're really going to punish Vladimir Putin by allowing us to import more of his oil, or at least Biden wants to import his oil, while Pelosi talks about not importing his oil, or, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the far left hand is doing in this case. And while that's happening, we are employing the Russians to negotiate a nuclear deal that will give them the atomic bomb. Absolute.
You mean the Iranians.
The Iranians, rather, with the give them the atomic bomb. This is, who would have saw this one coming, folks? You know, not 30 years ago, but certainly not even 2 years ago. Unbelievable.
Well, there's a whisper of good news in what you just described, and that is that the traditional Democrat reliance on fanatical messaging has broken down. Pelosi and Biden are on different pages. The hard left of the Democrat Party is just going insane. And the chaos within the Democrat, the junta and the Democrat Party is a pleasant thing to see. Listen, I'll take my pleasures where I can find them, and there aren't very many in the world today, so I'm going to grab that one.
Well, and then, JJ, you had just mentioned about, you know, who could see this coming. Well, I think we all realize that when Biden took possession of the White House, that any foreign affair adventures that popped up during his, quote, residency at the White House was going to be a total fuck-up, and that's what we have here. Oh, sorry, shouldn't have said that. Kamala Harris going to Poland to help ease issues. Of course we want Russian oil, because by God, we can't have American oil and American natural gas, but we'll give Putin the money to keep his forces driving into the Ukraine. I mean, are there any adults? I mean, seriously, are there any rational adults in the White House that can just say, hey, stop. This is all crazy. We want to get oil now from Venezuela. I mean, covered that a little bit last night in the ONT. And it's just like, we're self-sufficient with energy. Why are we becoming a crack-addicted welfare child of the world? We're leaders. We're, you know, American exceptionalism. And
well,
yeah.
But the answer is simple, and that is that the green energy initiatives are far more important to the Biden junta and the far left, actually the soft left, unfortunately, in the United States, than American standing in the world, than the great middle class of America doing okay. They simply do not care. And the drive to destroy American energy independence is just it's Gramscian in its elegance. It's a beautiful thing for them. Our standard of living will drop precipitously. And there will be unrest, and the great socialist, I can't even think of a good word to describe the socialist nightmare that they want. That is their goal.
Well, it's their fever dream, you know, basically to cause this chaos, sow this chaos. And as nutty as Charles Manson was, he was 50 years ahead of his time. He was going to do it with race wars that would be instigated. And then he, of course, and his merry pranksters over at Tex Watson's ranch was, were going to take over and rule America. But of course, now here we have you have that element of it, as we saw going into 2020 with the rioting over George Floyd. But this is just beyond, this is madness. It's literally, it's the Cloward Pivot Sullivan strategy of collapsing the system, and then all of a sudden people will be screaming for some sort of authoritarian or totalitarian takeover, and the best and the brightest, these eggheads, are going to rush on in and say, here we are, we have paradise on earth, and welcome to the new communist America. Of course,
this is not insanity, and I think we all have to be very careful when we categorize them as crazy. Yeah, we think they're crazy, but they're not crazy. We had racial strife over the last 2 years with the various thugs who were killed by cops, and they have added class warfare. Listen, a financial analyst living in Manhattan, making $2-3 million a year, and driving out to the Hamptons every weekend during the summer, doesn't give a shit that fuel is $7 a gallon. He simply doesn't care. That is a rounding error on his salary. You know, the guy who has to drive an hour from, Merced down to Fresno or whatever the hell it is, and is paying $5, $6, $7 a gallon, does care. He's the one who's being hurt, and that's the goal. They want to crush the middle class. They want to crush the working class. And the way they do it is by destroying our energy independence and driving the price of fuel into the sky.
See, here's the thing that I don't understand the calculus of. Yeah, you're going to do all that great stuff, quote unquote. You're going to kill the middle class, and you're going to create, paradise on earth, and you're going to be, king shit of the hill, and still make your money and not have to worry about it. But what happens when you destroy the middle class? What happens when you destroy our manufacturing base? What happens when you kill, the goose that lays the golden egg that drives all of this stuff? Yeah, you can, you bribe and do all the graft and all this kind of stuff to keep yourself insulated, but at a certain point, when a manufacturing base, as it probably has already, has collapsed, or when an economy collapses, lock, stock, and barrel, yeah, you may have a salary of $2-3 million a year and a major stock portfolio, homes in the Hamptons, and a penthouse on Park Avenue, but when the engine that drives that dies, then all bets are off, I would assume.
What CBD was talking about, the executive traveling up to the Hamptons, yeah, he doesn't give a shit. But this Cloward Piven thing only works in a small area. You could say take New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and that's all fine. And you got a core residency of people who believe in this, socialism, green stuff, whatever. But America's too big. It's too big geographically. It's too big demographically. And what's going to happen is if they keep pushing and pushing and pushing, I have a good friend of mine that drives a 3/4 ton GM product, 2500. It's a diesel Duramax. He's a small businessman. He delivers products to grocery stores. Well, if you got that guy who can't afford his diesel and you can't have the food in the shelves, we're not just going to sit around and go like, oh, that's okay. That's fine. We can live without this or we can live without that. Eventually they're going to get their dream of, trying to take over and be authoritarian, leaders and try to, keep us down. And there's going to be a fight. Look what they're doing in the Ukraine, 12 days. That's when Putin went in there. I was kind of thinking of the movie Stripes, where they said, like, oh, we'll go into Czechoslovakia. And it's like going into Wisconsin. Well, I got my ass kicked in Wisconsin. and that's what's going to, that's what's going to happen here eventually. In my lifetime, in your lifetime, I don't know. But, they keep pushing this shit. There's going to be resistance.
I was just thinking that, Mizzoune, when you were talking about that. Ukraine is how big? I think it's like as big as the state of Texas, if I'm correct. It's a pretty big mass of land. Now, of course, Russia's massive in its own rights, 13 time zones. But if you just disregard that, you still need to put in a sizable military to take, occupy, and defeat the military, and then occupy it and hold that territory. And if they're getting there, if the Russian army, which is even post the Soviet era, is still was or presumably was vaunted into being this very powerful striking force, and it's getting its ass handed to them by, let's face it, Ukraine is not exactly a major world power when it comes to the military. If they're getting bogged down after 12 days, and if the reports are true that aircraft are being shot down and soldiers are being captured and all these plans that they had are just going out the window, then what does that say if they try to pull that stunt here, God forbid, in the next 5, 10, 20 years, however many years, if a military tries to suppress its own people here, and we are certainly very motivated, or seemingly would be very motivated to resist that. And we're a hell of a lot bigger, obviously, than just the Ukraine. So there are some interesting and kind of frightening parallels there, albeit it's not a foreign power that's invading the United States, although you could argue that ideologically what's going on in D.C. is a very foreign power. But food for thought.
What a cheery day we're having.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And it's Monday. What a great way to start the week.
I don't like Mondays.
A guy by the name of Robert Kelly wrote in 1945 a blog or website. He talked about how, the title of it is Why the War in Ukraine is Destined to Get Far Worse. And he talks about how Putin has boxed himself in. He has to support his own self-image, and that is, the grand and glorious leader of a resurgent Russia. But according to this guy, and I'm not 100% sure that he's correct, what he is suggesting is that Russia is essentially a client state of China. And yeah, I know it's an interesting thing to think about. China sucks up a lot of Russian exports, and they certainly have a very, very long border with China. And the Chinese economy is growing much more quickly than the Russian economy, which actually I think is shrinking. Obviously, now it's shrinking. And that box he's talking about is the desire of Putin to show China that he is an actor on the world stage. Now, I think it's interesting. I'm not 100% sure that it's correct. But the gap between Ukraine and Russia right now is something that will not be solved at the negotiation tables. What Putin wants and what Ukraine is willing to give are miles and miles apart.
With respect to Russia and China, they're not exactly bosom buddies. I think they're more of a, they have a marriage of convenience. They have their own interests, and they spy each other in the best of times rather warily. And for a long time, and even today, their opponent was always the West and the United States of America. But they share a border and they share antipathy with each other. So as to who is the, sort of the inheritor of Marxist-Leninism, although who the heck knows if that calculus is still operating now. That said, I think Putin has much more to fear from the oligarchs in his country. I mean, Russia, after the fall of the Soviet Union, basically the people who took over were former KGB agents like him, and they just basically control
territories. Yeah, he was the biggest thug, and he was the one who took power, yeah.
Right, he wound up on top. But now, because of this gambit to grab the Ukraine is now costing these, all these oligarchs the isolation, whether it's the cutoff of MasterCard and Visa, the SWIFT system, oil, if it's going to be embargoed or not, who the hell knows. But all these things are really putting the bite on them. And Putin now is back in their corner. It's literally his life now. That's on the line doesn't succeed.
Yeah, the owner of Luck Oil, which is a big Russian oil company, has publicly come out against the war in Ukraine, which I think is very interesting. And he's getting destroyed. By the way, anybody listening to this podcast, don't buy fuel from Luck Oil, because damn it, we shouldn't support the Russians.
Right. We should buy from Citgo and you can support Maduro.
There
How
you go.
That?
Hey, but anyway, that was the first break. Which I thought was quite interesting. I'm not sure where he is. If I were he, I would not be in Russia or certainly in Moscow right now.
Or London.
Who, Putin? Oh, the guy from Lukoil? Yeah, he's probably, he's got to be. There's nowhere in the world that's safe when you have guys walking around with, the polonium.
Umbrella chips.
The polonium injector in the umbrella. Exactly. Bingo. That they got from the spy shop.
That 1945 article that you were talking about, I can only see it getting worse. I don't, China and Russia, I just don't see any kind of a big relationship going on there right now. But I'm afraid it is going to get worse, because Putin's just not going to say, we were in there for 12 days or 2 weeks or whatever, and we kicked butt and, we got what we wanted. That's not what it's going to be. If they start taking over cities, going door to door with armed Ukrainians versus armed Russians, that's not going to be pretty. France is trying to get escape routes set up for Ukrainians, and Russia says, they can escape to us. we'll take them. Everything will be fine. And it's like, no, it's not. And so the thing is this has been building up for years. And, you know, it's in Europe's backyard, front yard, side yard, whatever yard it is, geographically, it's Europe's problem to solve. It shouldn't be us. And I don't think NATO should be getting involved in it. If Germany or France wants to put a no-fly zone over Ukraine, God bless them.
Good luck with that.
They can enforce it. They can enforce it. We shouldn't. And as far, if you're going to embargo Russia, the United States shouldn't be letting Russia get by with oil sales, natural gas sales, shouldn't be allowing them anything to do with Iran and the nuclear deal. And, you know, hopefully the new prime minister over in Israel has the balls to take out any any Iranian bullshit that's going to take place while all this is going on. I mean, when great time for all the other bad actors to be busy is when, you know, Russia's on the front page of every newspaper.
Here's the thing that is the other side of the equation is, you know, it's not just in a vacuum what Russia is doing in the Ukraine. It's doing it because of the fecklessness, as CBD mentioned, and the idiocy and the incompetence of this administration and to a somewhat lesser extent what's going on in Europe. I mean, if let's say, just to game it out, let's say Putin decides, you know, okay, declare victory, hold on to the areas he's captured, which I think is the port city of Kherson and part of the Donbass. We've actually, the rhetoric that's been ramped up here in the United States is that he's an invader, he's Hitler, he's Nazi, and, you know, they're going to want unconditional surrender. So if he backs out and holds on to those territories, I can't imagine that the Biden junta is going to say, okay, you can keep those, slap them on the wrist and say, never do this again.
They will absolutely accept a status quo antebellum with a little bit of carve out. They will gobble that up. They are.
But the thing is, though, what will that do to whatever credibility, so to speak, that they have over here? With and say, wait a minute, this guy was supposed to be Hitler. Not only do we want, you should get him to not only withdraw from the areas he took, but you should get him to withdraw from the entire Crimea that he took in 2014. So this is, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out in the mentality of the average left-wing knucklehead and perhaps the mindset of whatever's going on in Foggy Bottom and in the Oval Office. But I mean, yeah, they want to get out desperately, but is that going to be acceptable?
The thing is that you just nailed it. There is no plan. No one can articulate a coherent foreign policy of the United States because it does not exist. They are reacting to every single thing. There is no proactive behavior. There is no grand plan. Dumb or brilliant. It doesn't matter. They don't have one. So listen, if Putin decides this is going to be a mess and he consolidates and he pulls out of any of the contested areas and takes whatever little bit of Ukraine he already controls, Biden will declare a huge victory on the part of American foreign policy and NATO and will do victory laps. And
in a wheelchair.
Yeah, in a wheelchair. Drooling into a cup. I think that shockingly, JJ, you are crediting them with more intelligence than they have, which you rarely do.
Yeah, I shouldn't do that. It's crazy. Meanwhile, you have knuckleheads on our side. What's people like frickin', you know, Sean Hannity and Lindsey Graham?
God. We spoke about
calling from
planet.
God, I want to just
South Carolina.
I just want to
just shut up.
I just want to rip his arms off and beat Hannity to death with them. I mean, my God, do you not realize that, yeah, the USSR is gone, but Vladimir Putin has, you know, he has nukes out the wazoo, whether it's the little fun size ones in a briefcase or, you know, MIRV-capable ICBMs. I mean, yes, let's whack Vladimir Putin. That's intelligence.
I don't believe that he will use nuclear weapons. However, I also didn't believe that he was going to go into Ukraine. I did what you have been doing with the United States, and that is crediting him with a bit more rational thought. That's an interesting question. Is he going to nuke Kiev, or you know, is he going to pop off a theater nuclear weapon?
I don't.
It's not even him. It's like, what if some you know, remember the movie The Bedford Incident? What if some trigger-happy knucklehead decides something is happening and he gets panicky, or the Ukrainians are surrounding him, or he might have a battlefield nuke or a small nuke, and he decides to shoot one off? And then, you know, it's accidents like that get your hair mussed. So
I don't think there'll be a nuclear attack or even, you know, the lone ranger nut from Siberia setting it off. I think whatever happens, it will be an accidental, you know, explosion at a nuclear plant. I just don't see. Yeah, I was wrong about Russia going into Ukraine, and I might be wrong in this one. I just don't see that type of destruction taking place for Putin to save face.
People are just desperate now. I think, you know, Putin's desperate for a win. Biden and they're probably desperate to get untangled from this insanity, you know. So hopefully, somebody says, "Let's."
Biden is leading so far from behind that, however it turns out, they can rationalize anything in their own head, and he'll say he's the winner. And you know,
exactly.
and Kamala, the San Francisco headhunter, was, you know, right there and and, you know, doing everything she can to cackle Putin back into Moscow.
You know, I knew she was a moron, an idiot, but I didn't realize just how comprehensive her stupidity is. It's really impressive.
It's terminal.
Oh, my God. She's dumber than a bag of rocks. I'm at a loss.
Biden has the excuse in that he has dementia. I mean, he literally has Lewy body dementia, and he's sundowning. I mean, she theoretically is in her right mind. But, I mean, she just has literally, oh, my God, this is just, it's just, the cluelessness is just, and tone deafness. And now all of a sudden she's worried about, like, LGBT issues in the Ukraine.
Really,
that's her key. Yes, that's her concern right now. Anyway, running a little bit long into this segment, and we'll be back in just a bit, so stay tuned. And we're back. Cut Chip Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. Off camera, off microphone, we were segueing into the situation with the Iran nuke deal and Russia. And it seems as if Russia is now brokering the nuke deal for us, while at the same time we're ramping up our anti-Russian rhetoric. Amazing. It's just, there's nobody, lights are on, but nobody's home. I don't even think the lights are on.
Right? No, our envoy, the American envoy to the Iranian negotiations, this guy named Robert Malley.
Oh, God, him?
Yeah, he's a real charmer. He's anti-American, anti-Israel, anti-West, and he's negotiating for us.
Perfect credentials.
Supposedly three of our negotiators have resigned because it's going so badly. Again, I can't confirm that, but that's what I have read.
For your definition of the word badly, does that mean we're not able to give them the nukes, or we are able to give them the nukes?
Well, we're not only going to release their nuclear program to do what they want it to do, which is to build a nuclear weapon to destroy Israel. Apparently, we are also negotiating away our sanctions against some of their worst terrorist actors, not just their nuclear scientists. It's a total capitulation to Iran and to Russia, which surprises me not at all, but it disgusts me. Some guy got something like Trump, President Trump. That's it.
Yeah.
He smacked around Iran pretty well, and he drove them back into their tunnels. Biden is telling them that they can do whatever the hell they want. There will be an Iranian nuclear device in the next few years, unless Israel and the Gulf states have something to say about that, because we are doing nothing to contain the nuclear program in Iran.
Yeah, I can't personally see how Israel and the Gulf Cooperation Council lets that happen. I mean, they know that is an existential threat, and you know, we were all worried when Netanyahu lost, and I know you have sort of hot water, cold water on Netanyahu, but at least this guy, Naftali Bennett, and both of them have said there's no way that they were going to allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And I don't know that a full-scale attack will happen, but for sure Israel and maybe the Saudis and the Emiratis are going to ramp up their clandestine efforts to kill as many of the scientists as possible, sabotage as many of the nuke plants as possible to try to prevent it. But from what I understand, they're closer than ever before to breaking out and having the material to make one or more warheads. So that is that's where the action is, folks, at least from my point of view.
Well, I was reading over the weekend, and, you know, it's how true it is, I don't know, but it looks like that Israel and Saudi Arabia is starting to even get a little bit closer than what they had been. So younger blood in Saudi Arabia, I think, realizes that the Iranians just can't have nuclear weapons. You know, Saudi Arabia wants to be the big dog on the block, and I don't think they're going to allow Iran to follow behind them in the pack. I think Saudi Arabia wants Iran to be, you know, a 7th century Afghanistan with Persians. So,
yeah, well, for those who don't know, the rift between Shiite and Sunni strains of Islam is almost as deep as the hatred between Islam and Judaism itself, and Islam and Christianity. So they are really, I mean, I don't really know the machinations of it. I would suggest reading people like Raymond Ibrahim or Robert Spencer, because they delve into the nuts and bolts of that very tortured history. But yeah, it is an existential threat to the Saudis every bit as much as it is to Israel. So there is common cause, and it is encouraging, although, you know, the sands of time pass slowly sometimes. There is a change, a gradual change, maybe culturally happening in Saudi Arabia and part of the Muslim world that is putting aside this age-old enmity against the Jews. I mean, sure, it moves at a glacial pace, but it is moving, and it is moving theoretically in the right direction in that regard. Is there going to be absolute modernity in an open society in Saudi Arabia in the next couple of years? I doubt it. Of course not. But it is moving in the right direction, and when you see some of the reporting in Saudi newspapers, where there is, you know, they're actually, I wouldn't say praising the state of Israel, but it's not, the anti-Israel rhetoric is gone, and there are actually even major criticisms of the so-called Palestinians, and that clues you in as to the mindset of what's sort of going on behind the scenes in that regard. So that is a good thing, and of course we go back to the giant orange Cheeto who said pussy and grabbed somebody's mish once, Donald Trump, who put this in place, the whole Abraham Accords, and they are paying huge dividends in terms of geopolitics of the Middle East, even with him gone, and that is still a major thing, and that was not scrapped, thank God.
And the sad thing about that is that the Accords were as a result of the United States, but Biden has very carefully rejected the results of those accords, and so any additional peacemaking efforts between Israel and the Arab world is going to exclude America, and that it decreases our global influence, and at a time where our global influence is being weakened on all fronts, it's simply a lousy idea. And then you know, getting back to Iran a little bit more, the estimate is that they're going to gain about $90 billion in foreign reserves that have been frozen. And then the additional revenue from being able to sell more oil and at a higher price, that's a lot of money. That'll buy them a bomb. And it's, well,
here come the pallets of cash. There you go.
Any containment of Iran is going to have to be taken, you know, will be some other actors other than the United States, because the only thing that this country wants to be involved in is, you know, celebrating, you know, chicks with dicks.
I celebrate chicks with dicks.
Well, it's important that our military is LGBT, well, fuck, what, LGBTQ compliant.
Plus.
M-O-U-S-E.
It's important that we have a comfortable relationship with our LGBT soldiers, because they fight better, right? That's the only reason why you would want them in an army, right? Because they fight well? Isn't that the whole idea? Or is it that they look great in pumps? I don't know.
Well, the pregnancy flight suits, let's not forget those. I mean, we talked about this on an earlier podcast, but just the, it's amazing how, I believe it was Admiral Halsey, William F. Halsey, better known as Bull Halsey, when he was talking about the Battle of the Philippine Sea. And without going into the history of the battle, we really screwed up, and the Japanese almost destroyed our landing force. But because of the gallant attacks of our tin can destroyers against the largest battleships in the world, the Yamato and the Musashi, we turned them back, and they basically faked them out. So it's really, I think he was once quoted as saying, "It's the side that makes the fewest mistakes is the side that wins." So you kind of look at, back to Putin and his generals being totally caught off guard with their invasion of Ukraine. I mean, you got to hope that hopefully the Chinese military and the Iranian military is less competent than even we are, with soldiers in drag, transsexuals, pregnancy flight suits, and the knuckleheads who can't drive a ship straight without hitting another one.
And don't forget green tanks, because they can always set up a generator out in the middle of nowhere to charge up, your tank, so it can, travel 20 miles before it runs out of power.
Green is not olive drab, by the way, in this instance, for those who don't understand that.
You got to wonder what China is thinking with Taiwan, because they've been planning this. They've been planning the invasion of Taiwan since 1949. And they tried a couple of times, so they probably have more significant planning in place for the invasion of Taiwan, and they have many, many more resources than Russia has.
They
have seen quite clearly that the world will do nothing.
Right. That is true, though. But all things being equal, if you just disregard the fecklessness of the rest of the world, from a strictly military standpoint, you're not talking about rolling across a border. You're talking about a wide ocean. You're talking about a seaborne invasion. And that is a very different animal than what Putin is trying to do in Ukraine. And he's getting a bloody nose from there. Question is the PLA, Army, Navy, and Air Force, are they as vaunted and up to as good as they are, we think they are? Or are they just like their cat food and their drywall, rotten to the core, and victims of a massive amount of corruption in their own government, which is staggering what we know of it. So
no, I think you're 100% correct. The People's Liberation Army is probably crappier than they think they are, and crappier than we think they are. But the brutality of the current Chinese government will push past that pesky little detail. They're going to lose 100,000 men.
So what?
Crossing the straits into and taking Taiwan. They don't care.
I would even go. I would say that they, unlike Putin and the Russians, I would predict that they'd get their ass kicked, and things would go really badly. And I think they'd have no qualms about dropping a nuke on Taipei, without a doubt. But the thing is,
getting better and better.
I'm not saying we're not going to get our hair mussed.
Oh, my God.
20 to 30 million.
Time to start drinking yet?
Oh.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Let's take a break. I'll be back in 2 minutes. Cut Chip Newsletter Speaks on the podcast. Hang in there. And we're back, and we've decided that between the depressing off camera, everything's so depressing what we've talked about now, between potentials for nuclear war and all this kind of stuff happening, we want something lighthearted like cancer. But that's maybe a little bit too lighthearted. Let's go back into something more locally focused, and the internal struggles with the GOP and just the insanity and the fecklessness and the backstabbing of people like Mitch freaking McConnell and going against Rick Scott.
I think CBD covered this a couple episodes ago, where McConnell excels at the minutiae of court nominations and court nominees at and the federal level. But other than that, he is the most feckless. Oh, I just can't say what I want. What a feckless, worthless son of a.
Okay.
How's that?
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
In the words of Elaine. In the words of Elaine Chao, you go now.
You be here 4 hours.
You know.
40 years.
You know, we have lambasted and chastised the Republican Party for being a stupid party forever. And we have a chance to kind of change that around with Rick Scott's, I forget right what he calls it, but it's basically a new contract with America or for America. Yeah. And he doesn't even want to bring it up for discussion, let alone a vote. And I'm like, you know, if there's 50 to 52% of people in this country that pay no income tax, they shouldn't be calling the shots. Everybody should be paying some tax.
Agreed.
Agreed,
but
absolutely.
But again, you know, it is still the party. And one of the successes, I just mentioned it a few minutes ago, of the Democrats was a unified voice. And they're losing that now. And it's one of the reasons why they're failing so miserably. And President Trump had the opportunity and tried quite hard to create a unified voice for the Republican Party. And he was fought tooth and nail by people like Mitch McConnell. And they fought him
Paul Ryan.
Much harder. Oh, yeah, Paul Ryan. They fought him much harder than they ever fought the Democrats. And unfortunately, until we have a unified voice within the Republican Party, there will not be that unity. And Mitch McConnell is the poster child for the destruction of any chance we have for a unified Republican Party.
Well, that's just it. It's we say, and I've come to the conclusion, we're not the stupid party. I mean, they're in collusion with the Democrats. There is no, I mean, this illusion of a two-party system where one is trying to, you know, one is left-wing and the other one is right-wing for your definitions of those terms. You know, one is trying to halt the spread of big government socialism. The GOP is not about that at all. The GOP is basically, you know, sort of FDR light. They believe in the New Deal. The only, you know, they're not against it. They just think that they could manage a giant bureaucracy better than the Democrats, and they can't. They're all aboard this notion of turning us into something that we were never meant to be, and that is a top-down authoritarian planned economy socialist nation. And that's why Mitch McConnell is doing what he's doing. That's why Graham and McCain and all and the Bushes and all these people have been doing what they're doing is because they're on board with this. They're on board with the dismantling of America. They just want to make a buck off of it. So that's why they oppose the Trump agendas, because he came in and basically overturned the tables of the money changers. And so he's the harbinger of a sea change of people awakening to what is wrong with this country. Now, yeah, he came from New York City and he was a liberal and he's this and he's that. But the thing is, he knew that things were wrong and this was not the way things are meant to be. And, you know, and he was literally, as someone said, because there was no Trump administration, there was only Trump and maybe one or two or three people that he could trust. Everybody else, to one degree or another, sabotaged him, stabbed him in the back, or in the case of the open opposition of the left, stabbed him in the face. So, yeah, Mitch McConnell's not, you know, it's not the stupid party. It's they're you know, they're the Washington Generals.
It's the treasonous party.
It's the they are a treasonous
right.
party.
So a bit of a segue. I've been reading Angelo Codevilla, who, by the way, I recommend to everyone.
Oh,
yeah. The Ruling Class, which he wrote about 10 years ago in the aftermath of the Tea Party fiascos. And anyway, he wrote something that I thought was very interesting. And he spoke about the various departments within the federal government. And he said that the metrics are wrong. And he used the Department of Education as an example. He said that if education in America has gotten worse since the Department of Education was created, then we should get rid of the Department of Education. The metric should be simple, and that is if it works, keep it. And if it doesn't work, don't try to change it, end it. Now, that's a sea change that will never occur in the United States. But it's a very simple way of looking at how government functions and whether government is functioning. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And
no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it was the great Milton Friedman who once said there is nothing so permanent as a temporary government program. And that's what it's all about. A bureaucracy's, and somebody else said, the number one goal of a bureaucracy is not to solve a problem, but to perpetuate the bureaucracy. So they will never survive, solve a problem, and especially if that bureaucracy in its way, however it does it, especially a place like the EPA, which we should talk about because there's a big decision coming down with them, you know, they will do everything to take your freedom away. They are not about solving whatever the problem they are about solving. They are about basically keeping you in your place to let the government go ahead and do its thing, whatever that might be, whether it's under the rubric
of have our jobs.
Under the rubric of education or commerce or health or whatever it might be. And I was just saying, the EPA is a big case coming up before SCOTUS. There's another institution that fills me with strength and confidence, that will question the nature. Is carbon dioxide a pollutant or is it not a pollutant? So, again, the EPA wants to stay in business. They're not about protecting the environment. They're about controlling you by controlling every aspect of your life that under the rubric of the environment. Oh, you can't do this because there's an impact on the environment. No, it's insane. So we shall see.
So speaking of courts, over at PJ Media, there's an article about, speaking of stupid people, California Governor Newsom.
Oh, boy.
He wants every county in California to have something called a mental health court to adjudicate mentally ill people to make sure that they are held accountable by the state. How, I have no idea. You know, absent forcing them to take their medication, there's nothing we can do about these people. And they are going to continue to push people onto the tracks of trains and beat people over the head with hammers and
crap
smear their
them.
Feces all over them. This is a typical left-wing answer to a problem.
But
and that is just throw more money at it, never hold anybody accountable.
Hope
that it goes away.
Tinfoil hat coming on now. If you scratch the surface, it's kind of chilling. Well, define what someone who is mentally ill is. I mean, look at what they've done with the January 6th detainees who are political prisoners and the men and women and the parents at the school board meetings who are now under investigation for terrorism. Sooner or later, it's going to be, if you espouse a view that is anti-critical race or, you know, anti-diversity, inclusion and equity, die, or or pro-Republican, you must be mentally ill. So we get to throw you in jail, confiscate your children and wealth, and we'll make sure you get better. Just like they did in the old Soviet Union, you know, in the psychiatric.
We'll give you three squares a day in a cot.
It's actually, you know, the Soviet Union is a perfect example of that. The definition of mental illness in the Soviet Union was anti-Soviet activity.
Yep. I mean, you'd have you'd have to be, if you wanted to emigrate, they said, well, you'd have to be,
you'd have to be crazy
to emigrate.
You'd want to leave.
Yeah, it's a paradise on earth. Yeah, exactly. So these people, let me tell you something.
Except for Siberia.
We have seen what they have done over the last 2 years, and believe me, stuff like this raises alarm bells for me.
Well, even the California ACLU was not happy about this.
Wow, you're kidding.
Yeah, which shocked the shit out of me, but
So where's Gavin going to get all this money there, Charles?
Oh, he's going to increase the top state income tax rate. What is it now? 13%? 14%? It's unbelievable how expensive it is to live in California.
Yeah, plus I understand if people leave, I think did they succeed in doing it, or are they trying to do the exit tax?
Oh, the exit tax.
The penalty, like, you want to move and leave us, then we'll penalize you, like, you know, whatever, for trying to escape the Golden State.
That's interesting. It'd be interesting to see how they would do that.
I don't know. I mean, but if you're no longer a resident of the state and you file another state's income tax, then California.
Well, look at Bill Clinton. You know, he had retroactive federal income tax. So I don't see, you know, the state of California not at least attempting to do it. Whether they're successful or not is another story.
It will, of course, wind up at the Supreme Court, where, of course, John Roberts will say, it's a tax.
It's a tax.
It's a sex.
It's a tax. Yeah.
Gentlemen, I think we've about come to the end of our little jaunt into merriment here for the week. Any final
merriment?
Yeah, really. Any
what kind of cocktails are we going to be drinking this afternoon?
Well, any final thoughts that we missed or didn't get covered? Or I think we're okay.
I think we're doing pretty well.
Very good. Well, on that cheerful note,
yes.
On that cheerful note, This has been the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast, episode 13. JJ Sefton saying so long from me, and thank you to CBD and Misanthropic Humanitarian. We'll see you next time.
See you later, folks.
Bye.